I don't know about you, but I do not recognize this Jesus. A mother is desperate to find healing for her daughter, and out of his mouth come stinging words. His words are narrow and nationalistic, even insulting, as they stiff-arm this pleading mother. Is this the Jesus that we know and love? There's even more happening in this story that challenges our perceptions and expectations. This mother, who is a non-Israelite, an outsider, a foreigner, essentially comes to the front of Jesus' classroom and takes over the instruction, schooling Jesus, as it were, in the lesson of the day, which turns out to be this: God's is an expansive love and reaches across every barrier and boundary. The woman is well-reasoned in her explanations, articulate in her voice. She takes the chalk in hand, and on that chalkboard is drawing diagrams with big, wide circles, with bridges, with wide open doors. She's teaching what Jesus is supposed to be teaching, educating the Jesus we thought was the educator. What's happening here? Back and forth they go with their dialogue in this encounter. By the end of it, we have one of the longest exchanges between Jesus and another person in the entire gospel, longer than Jesus talking with his disciples about how to feed the thousands, longer than Jesus and Peter when Peter's walking on water or trying to, longer than Jesus' exchanges with Herod or Pilate during his trial. Back and forth they go. Six times, the woman, Jesus, the mother, Jesus, the woman, Jesus. And she gets all the best lines, by the way. One of which has found its way to yearning hearts and whispering lips across the ages in the church's worship liturgy and in our private practice of prayer. Kyrie eleison. Those beautiful, time-kept Greek words find their way into our words, our prayers, our souls, lifted from the page of Matthew's gospel, lifted from this woman's prayer. Kyrie eleison, Lord, have mercy. Another remarkable sentence, another comeback to Jesus that is both diminutive and towering at one and the same time. Even the dogs eat the crumbs from under the table. Many of us recognize that language from what is known as the prayer of humble access. It appears in our communion liturgies, beloved by many, a prayer inherited from the Church of England's Book of Common Prayer. We are not worthy so much as to gather up the crumbs under thy table. Many of you recognize that prayer. It is a beautiful prayer, but it is not, technically speaking, a biblical prayer. The biblical prayer, drawing upon the language of this exchange, which that prayer does, the biblical prayer would be more like this. We are worthy to gather up the crumbs from under the table. Which is it? Are we worthy? Are we unworthy? It is a heavyweight of a theological question. And the mother of a sick child, with faith as feisty as it comes, weighs in on the matter, essentially asserting that, yes, we are worthy of the mercy of God. It is not right to give the children's food to the dogs, Jesus says. And her answer, yes, but even the dogs gather the crumbs from under the table. Jesus concedes her point, and with two words he never puts together anywhere else in all of the four Gospels, great and faith, Jesus affirms this woman's strength, her tenacity, her intellect, her power, her feisty claim to mercy, her prayer of Kyrie eleison that is not really a plea as much as a directive. Lord, have mercy. Woman, he says, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. Education by Jesus, or the education of Jesus by a Canaanite mother who is simply practicing really good theology about human worth and the assurance of God's mercy. But does Jesus really need to be taught about such fundamental truths of God's character and nature and way in the world? He demonstrates over and over in the Gospels, after all, his willingness to cross boundaries, to break down barriers, to challenge rules, even to defy authority, to demonstrate the reach of God's expansive love. The fact that he is even here in Tyre and Sidon, modern-day Lebanon, a foreign country, having this conversation with a non-Israelite woman is evidence to that fact. If Jesus has only come to the lost sheep of Israel, as his words claim, why has he left Israel to hang out with Canaanites? Something's up here. Step back a bit further, widen the lens, and have a look at the whole Gospel of Matthew, and we will notice that Matthew opens with a genealogy of Jesus. We know about genealogies. One that is exceptional for one specific reason. In a listing that would traditionally identify fathers in the lineage, not mothers. This is, after all, a deeply patriarchal society. A genealogy lists father, son, and so on. This genealogy includes five women. That's intriguing in and of itself, but there's more. Three of those five women are non-Israelites, including King David's own great-grandmother, Ruth, and her mother-in-law, Rahab, a Canaanite woman. Jesus, we learn, right away from the beginning pages of the Gospel of Matthew is part Canaanite himself. Just beyond this genealogy, all of us know that the first to kneel in homage to the Christ child are not Israelites, but foreigners, magi from the Far East. And on and on and on this story goes in just such a way. Later, Jesus will encounter a Roman soldier, another foreigner, an occupier of Israel, as it happens, asking Jesus for healing for his servant who is ill. His confidence in Jesus is so pronounced. It's a kind of certainty recognizable in today's story with another non-Israelite who brings faith to an encounter with Jesus, that Jesus says, "Not even in Israel have I found faith such as that demonstrated by this Roman soldier." Those are not the words of one who believes God's mercy is reserved exclusively for Israel. Later, two non-Israelites struggling with their inner demons, many of us know that experience in one way or another, struggling with inner demons are healed by the merciful hand of Jesus, the long arm of grace, leading them out, calling them to life again. And finally, at the very end of Matthew's gospel, serving as a sort of bookend opposite that opening genealogy that began the gospel, Jesus says, "Disciple all nations." Not just this nation, this tribe, this circle and clan, not just your very best friends who look like you. Disciple all nations in the good news of the love and grace of God. Jesus is not a nationalist, believing God's love is restricted to one people, one tribe, one nation. His statement about being sent only to Israel is entirely subverted by the pattern of his own ministry through the Gospel of Matthew, extending the love and mercy of God to whomever and wherever. There's something else going on in this strange encounter. I have an idea. Jesus' way of educating includes a wide, we might say, variety of forms. Parables, proverbs, puzzles, questions, riddles, woe sayings, enactments of different kinds, blessings, sermons, stories, signs. And we might suppose the education style of Jesus for a variety of learners and learning types, multiple intelligences, might easily include a form that was not uncommon for teachers in antiquity, including Jewish rabbis, and that is pitching a false proposition to have it dismantled by the keen assessment and analysis and counterpoint of the students in the group. The rabbi might say something like, "God loves you if you are righteous." The class would then protest, "That's not true." To which the rabbi would respond, "Okay, prove it." Examples would ensue to challenge that notion. "Well, there's Moses, not altogether righteous, and Sarah. Look at King David or his ancestor Rahab, the harlot. God loves the unrighteous," they would argue with the rabbi in response to the assertion. Okay, okay, the rabbi would conclude, gathering all of this up. God loves the righteous and the unrighteous. All heads would nod. In philosophy, we call that thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. In the Proverbs, we call that iron sharpening iron. In the classroom, the teacher teaches, but so do the students. It's reciprocal. It's interwoven. Maybe Jesus is setting up a false proposition with his student. Really, she is his co-teacher, this Canaanite mother, in front of attentive disciples, giving her all the best lines in the process until she wins rather decisively in front of God and everybody. And by means of her educating Jesus about the breadth and depth of God's mercy, Jesus is in fact educating his followers there on site and whoever else overhears across the ages, educating his followers about, yes, the same thing, the breadth and depth of God's mercy. Today we would call it team teaching. Martin Luther once said, "The world wants to know, is there a merciful God?" Is there a God who truly loves not only the righteous, but also the less righteous? Does the kindness, the caring, the forgiveness, the healing touch of God extend even to me? Luther said, that's what the world wants to know. Is he right? Do you agree? Is that what the world wants to know? It's certainly what this woman wants to know from her very first cry, Kyrie eleison. The disciples, they stay right there, standing in the midst of that tense exchange. I think they want to know too. Do you want to know? I do. Is there a merciful God? Does God's mercy reach to the refugee, the outsider, the asylum seeker? Does God's mercy extend to the power-hungry politician, the cunning and immoral business person, the homeless woman, the jobless man, the ungrateful, the selfish, the lonely, the weary, the hurting? Does God's heart reach into your home to hold you, your loved ones there with you or separated beyond your reach, to hold you in mercy? Is God with children this week, and parents and teachers, administrators and staffs, as all of these groups and all of this with them cross a threshold into a school year like no other, so freighted with uncertainty and apprehension, as Ms. Laura said earlier, so frightening in so many ways, so scary? Is God's mercy there, here, too? That's what the world wants to know. the theologian once said, putting together two words that Jesus has never put together before and will never put together again. Jesus says to the mother, the foreigner, the outsider to the faith, great is your faith. As if to suggest that this woman alone could have co-taught this class with him. This class in which the lesson for the day is this. Yes, there is a merciful God whose steadfast love extends to you, to me, to the whole hurting and hopeful world, the righteous and the unrighteous, all. Woman, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you wish. And her child was healed. Class dismissed.